Hello and welcome to the How to Not Marry a Jerk podcast. This is a countercultural conversation about how to do relationships the biblical way. I hope in all that we say, you hear the loving voice of a father who's got a great future for you. My name is Nate Swanson. I'm the lead pastor at New City Church in Great Falls, Montana. I am joined by my beautiful wife, Rachel.
Hey, it's me.
Our church's youth pastor, Aaron Seibert.
Hello.
And his amazing wife, Megan.
Hey.
Come on, let's dive into today's discussion. You guys, it is lucky episode number 13. And for all of our faithful listeners out there, you might be interested to know that season one is concluding soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is 13.
All good things have to come to an end.
We're looking forward to a couple of more episodes after this. Season one will end with episode number 15. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's official. There you go. There's the preview of what's to come. But today, we're going to start with a question. Tell us about a time you absolutely ate it. You fell. Publicly or privately, when did you fall? I've got a story to start with if nobody else is ready.
Okay, but wait, before you start, isn't it the funniest thing, like when you just like trip and fall outside and you're by yourself and you almost like wish that someone was there to laugh with you because you're like, it is funny. I'm in a lot of pain, but it is funny, but it's just unfortunate that there's no, like you kind of look around like no one, only maybe people in their houses are laughing at me, but I want to laugh with you.
Anyone the whole else reason feel- you get married is so, so that you have somebody to laugh when you fall.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I do feel a little sheepish if I'm like working on the house alone and I like hurt myself or do something and then I exclaim, then I'm like, oh, I'm a dork. Like,
that was just to myself.
Gosh, that hurt self. Yeah. All right, so one night, for those who don't know, just a little slice of my background. We always lived out of town growing up. We never owned a ranch, but we always had like land, enough land to have some goats or some pigs or some sheep or some, you know, other livestock. Well, in this season of my life, we had horses and the horses escaped. They got out of the corral at one point and we were afraid if they get, you know, out onto the road, obviously not going to be a good thing. So you want to catch your animals. If you got animals, keep them caught. So we're trying to keep the animals caught and we're out for hours, like getting these animals. I think I was like a freshman in high school, sophomore in high school, something like that, down by Bozeman. And it's raining in the middle of this. We're slipping and sliding all over the place. We're in the mud, you know, multiple vehicles, whatever. So finally, the end of the night, we capture all the horses. We got them by... They're, yeah.
How do you catch a horse? Because I remember like trying to catch a cat one time and I was like, what do you do? Here, cat.
It's very similar.
Come on
actually.
Over here.
If you've ever caught a cat, you could catch a horse.
I didn't catch it.
Then you wouldn't be able to catch a horse.
No.
So anyway, end of the night. I'm trying to make this short. It's not working.
But I want to know how to catch a horse.
Okay. Well, this is not the podcast for that.
Okay.
This is the podcast for how to catch a man. That's what this is.
Any relation there? Or?
Well, kind of.
A stud.
You got a bit of a stallion over here, if I might say so myself. Anyway, back to the story. So it's wet, it's raining. We're walking back to the barn and we're all kind of coming over in shifts. And I was about 30 or 40 yards ahead of my brother, John. He told me later it was the funniest thing to watch because I'm walking along. I'm half awake and just like totally ticked off because I'm not a farm guy. That is not my life at all. I'm included in this life because of my family's obsession with
they love it.
Living difficult. I don't know what their obsession was. There was nothing attractive about this life to me. So I'm walking along. I'm just kind of in a daze. Can't wait to get back to the house, shower, get in bed. And all of a sudden, it is dark, just completely dark. I'm like, what in the world happened? And then I realized I had fallen just straight into a massive hole that we had dug in the ground. We were building a barn. I would have been younger, probably eighth grade. We had been building a pole barn and to do so, we just dug these huge deep holes. They're probably 2 foot in diameter, about 4 or 5 feet deep. And they were going to be the place where you put a massive column, a big beam. And then this series of beams would be the structure of the barn. So this big hole just swallowed me right up. And I always thought it was so dumb. Do you guys remember those cartoons where somebody's walking along and they walk right into like an open manhole without the cover?
And
you're like, that's so dumb. That wouldn't happen. Like you wouldn't fall straight down. No, you would.
But I did it. How do you not know that? Like, how do you not feel?
Well, like, yeah, but I mean, it happened in like moments, just, you know, just a moment in my mind. My brain is like, it's dark. And then, you know, whatever, half a second later, I'm like, of course, I feel dirt all around me. My head is against a rock, whatever. Like it's not like it took me 30 seconds to figure it out. Yeah. But your brain, I think when you go through something traumatic, you know, or alarming, your brain goes into a different speed.
And it takes a little bit to register.
It felt like 5 seconds of recognizing where I was and what had happened, but I'm sure it was just moments. But yeah, my brother John got a kick of it. He was like, I was walking, watching you, and all of a sudden you were gone. I'm like, yeah, I had the exact same experience. I was walking and all of a sudden it was dark. Totally, totally taken out by my my ignorance of my surroundings.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Did you maintain the horse or did it escape?
I was one of the people that was not physically holding a horse. So I mean, yeah. Luckily, that horse would have been gone.
Yeah.
Rachel would have never caught him.
We have a patio in our backyard that's just like 2 concrete steps up, and then it's a concrete patio. And when Nora was about 3, she had this piece of wood that she had like a plank, and she had built a little like ramp for her Strider bike.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
And I was walking in from our garage into the house, and I caught my foot on the bottom of the ramp.
Oh.
And it like lifted up the board. So I had no way to like adjust and like catch myself with the next step. Cause if you know, you trip 1 foot, you know, the other foot can sometimes catch.
Yeah.
And I went down hard and fast and scraped my face on the concrete. And I had this big scrape on my nose for like probably 2 weeks. Like, and I think Aaron was gone.
I was on a pastor's retreat.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of my misfortunate happens. They happen when Aaron's on a pastor's retreat. Cause I've had lots of things that have happened that I'm like, no one's here.
One is
and he's
coming
texting
up.
You. We just had the best steak, man. Wonderful time of prayer.
He probably
man,
was
like
at
a mountaintop
the steakhouse
experience.
And whatever you guys were doing at that point. Anyways, I was just like,
that's all we do on pastor's retreats. We just live large, you know, it's just like we're surrounded by glamour and great meals.
Yeah.
Sorry. Anyway.
Definitely. But anyways, I just was like sitting there fuming for like hours of just like being so irritated that this situation happened to me and my 3-year-old just oblivious. And I can't take my anger out on her.
No.
It's not really her fault.
It's not for any.
So I just was.
Why didn't you construct a more sturdy bridge?
Yeah. So I just remember that one. It's a rough time.
How long did you have the facial?
A while. Probably
issue.
Like maybe 2 weeks to a month. It was like.
Did anybody ask you about it or just awkwardly look at other parts of your
face? It was
face?
Like my whole nose was just scraped up. It wasn't like you got a scratch on the side of your face that if you turn one way, you can kind of see. It was like very blatantly in front.
Yeah, there's no way to not look at
it. So it was just kind of like, well, it is what it is. I fell.
Okay, this is totally a sidebar, but I've noticed I'm really in this phase of just asking people about, hey, I've never, is that a birthmark or is that a scar? I've never noticed that thing on your face recently. And what I've noticed, I can think of 2 distinct conversations in the last week and a half. People aren't bothered to describe to you, that's actually a birthmark.
Okay.
Or, I got this scar when I was a kid. Or
that's a pretty good point, actually, there, Swanson. Because when I have fake teeth because I knocked them out when I was a kid. And
all of them are fake.
Well, I have a handful
dentures.
Of them. But when I had braces.
That's not true.
No. When I had braces, they glued the 2 front teeth together. It looked so terrible.
It looked like the dentist pulled out his hot glue gun.
Yeah.
He did.
He should have done that because that would have looked better than what they did. I don't even know what they were thinking. I'm sure my parents were like mortified, like, what do we do? Anyways, I remember seeing kids, like this was my freshman year. I remember them talking at a table and I could tell they were asking about my mouth because I just kept my mouth closed
what
all the time because it looked terrible. And I remember thinking, like, I wish people would just go ahead and ask me because I don't want to just like inform people, like, hey, by the way, my teeth glued together.
You're like, what? We
but I would rather them just go ahead and ask, like, hey, what's going on between those teeth?
Yeah.
And then I could just tell them. So, yeah, you're probably right. People probably appreciate it.
I appreciate it when people are like, hey, you look fat. What's going on? I'm like, well, yeah. No, thank you for the opportunity to explain.
Do you eat more these days?
I eat a lot.
I like food.
If you really want to hear a segment on Nate's thoughts on this, go listen to our 9 a.m. Easter service.
Yeah.
That's true. Was it worse at the 9 a.m. than the 11?
I wasn't in the 11 a.m., oh, so I only have the 9 to reference.
I think I might have been worse at the 11. Because in 11 I said, some of you look chubby.
That was in the 9
8. That was in the 9.
Yeah. I'm not going to point you out.
Maybe I didn't know. I don't know.
Okay, but interesting thought. This is getting so off track.
Yeah, we're only 9 minutes in and people are like, "What are they going to get to the day?"
We're nearing to the end of the
What if
season,
our teeth didn't have any lines or definition in them? Like they were just blobs.
I just wanted that my whole life.
What do you mean, just like one solid?
Yeah, like, you know, like the cartoon kind of thing.
I'd more likely break the whole thing out.
Anyways, do you have any stories?
But wait, I want to know, do you guys feel the same? Like if you had something on your face or like, would you appreciate if someone was like, hey, what happened there, buddy? Or is that...
Yeah, I mean,
or would you be like,
bother me?
I never noticed.
You must be also on the same phase as Nate, because you recently asked me what my scar on my face is from.
I did ask you.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the second one.
Isn't that funny? Like we've known each other for so long.
Well, one of these conversations with like this 20 something young, attractive young lady. And I was talking to her and her husband. I was like, hey, I've never noticed that. Is it? And she's like, oh yeah, it's a birthmark. I've known her for a while. I'm like, crazy. Never noticed it before.
And did you go, ooh.
Yeah, I gave her one of those. I did. I was like, I kind of recoiled.
Not good at hiding
and I, you know how you like same. Hex a vampire with your fingers crossed?
No, I didn't. Whatever.
I didn't do that. I can't remember the other one. I think the other one was a dude, like an older guy who was just like, couldn't wait to be like, yeah, that's how I broke my lip. And then also over here. Yeah.
Yeah.
It turned into a recitation of all of his scars. Well, so
that's fascinating.
Okay, sorry. He's got his shirt pulled up and he's like, this is my belly right here.
Aaron and Rachel have not shared their stories.
Speaking of scars, sometimes you get those when you fall. Tell us about a time that you fell, ate it, biffed.
Do you have one?
I do.
I do.
We were doing construction on our new building. We were doing a demo. We were demolishing. Yes. And were you there when this happened?
No, but I remember. You got a good
one. We were cleaning up sheetrock in like a section of a room where we had ripped out part of a metal wall. So there was like the bottom plate of the metal that was kind of like stuck up and kind of... created like a place that would catch, and my dad walked past it and he fell, and Scott Westlink and I caught him. He didn't fall to the ground. We caught him.
Nice.
And we're like, oh yeah, good. You know, glad you got caught. My dad's like, oh, you know, and he's got neuropathy in one of his legs. It just doesn't function. So there's no way for him to get around it. And immediately it's like, I pat him on the back and then I walk the same direction and trip over the exact same thing. And I hit my hand so hard and actually
Hand.
Just missed a nail, like really close to a nail. Sheesh. And we were going to Kosovo like 2 days later and it was like, oh man, did I break my hand and all that? We went and it was rough for about a month. I think I just had a bruise on like, you know how you get bruises on your bones or whatever. Eventually it was just gone. But yeah, that was a pretty awesome moment just immediately after.
That is so funny, especially that it's your dad. It's because you guys are related.
Scott's like, I better keep an eye on you.
I don't have neuropathy and both my legs function well. I was just not paying attention.
That's so great. Okay, so I think I should share this one. And then we actually have a reenactment video of this. And I think we should share it
whenever we release this episode,
sure. I think we should share it on our social media.
Oh, cool. Okay.
The reenactment is quite...
I've seen it before.
Phenomenal.
Very good performance.
Very good. Very painful. Very good cinematography.
Cinnamon? She's really spicing it up.
Hey!
Nice.
Okay, so I was like, I don't know, 4 months pregnant with Isabel. So then Isaac was less than a year old. And I'm carrying him down the stairs. And, you know, like, as a new mom, you're like, no matter what, if a bullet came my child's way, I would stand in front of that bullet. Mm-hmm. I had thought of this scenario a million times. If I fell down the stairs, I would...
I would sacrifice my body. I don't care if
life and limb.
It doesn't matter. I will sacrifice for my child and I will save them no matter what it takes.
You're like a mama bear.
I thought I was.
Mama kangaroo.
I thought I
stay
was.
In my pouch, little
stay
one.
Stay in my pouch. I've got you both. Turns out I sacrificed both of them. In that moment, I trip on the stairs and I'm not even joking.
Every baby for himself.
The first thought was lose the baby, save yourself. This is not an exaggeration. I literally threw Isaac and landed on my belly. So like all the scenarios that could be bad, I accomplished. And I was hurt for an entire year. So there was that.
There you go. That's the
kind of now people ask Isabel what happened to her face.
Well, my mom. Wow. Never noticed that mark before. What is that?
I did have to pay a high price. And turns out Isaac was totally fine. He loved it. He thought that was a great adventure. He probably did.
He probably enjoyed that more than the reenactment video.
When our kids would watch the reenactment video, they'd start crying and be like, no, don't show us. It's like the music. And so now you guys are going to have to go to our social media.
It's a real tearjerker, that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We have to remember to show that.
Okay. It's quite funny.
Tom, don't let us forget.
Yeah, Tom.
Okay.
All right. So you might be wondering.
15 minutes in.
Why, in fact, did we take 15 minutes plus in order to answer those random questions and address those random rabbit trails? Here's what we're saying, people. You know what? We're nearing the end of season one, and you're going to miss us for a bit. We don't even yet know if there's going to be a season two. So
I did.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
I had one note I wanted to share from past episodes.
On this.
It has nothing to do with this, but...
Does it have to do with your Carfax?
It has something to do with the past episode. We talked about a couple pairings, like, I don't know if it was friendships or like...
Like our favorite couples.
Favorite
buddies. Oh, yeah. Buddies. Like duos.
Yeah. And somebody mentioned Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, and I have a little update for you. It seems as if they are, in fact, friends, because I saw them on the Oscars a few weeks ago.
And a phenomenal airing of the Oscars.
They were together presenting. It just felt like that wrapped all of that with a little bow, so...
Sounds like we need to do a pop culture podcast.
I wouldn't have much information for you, and I don't
Me
think
either,
that...
because I don't even know who Danny DeVito
Arnold
is.
Arnold Schwarzenegger nor Danny gosh. DeVito are pop culture.
Hold on, legit? You don't know? You don't know who Danny DeVito is?
I'm sure if I saw his face, like...
Jimmy John's commercials.
He's this tall.
Jimmy John's commercials?
Currently, that's what...
Really?
I didn't know
I'll
that.
Google it.
Have you guys noticed this, that celebrities are seeming to be on a lot of like normal commercials lately?
Yeah.
It's kind of odd.
Well, it's because they can't remember the lines for a full movie, but you know,
so
a minute.
Putting him on.
Oh, yeah. What? That's Maybe. Danny DeVito? Yeah. I thought Danny DeVito was the guy from Full House, Jesse with the leather jacket.
Oh, really? What? What's that guy's name?
I don't know, but.
What's his name? Jesse.
If you know, why don't you email us?
Leather.
podcast@newcity.church.
It's going to come
to me. I mean,
we
can just Google that too.
It'll come back to you when we're in the serious part. It'll give us a good...
Okay, I'll just do it for the sake of mine.
The 90s heartthrob.
Hold on. Yeah,
he definitely should know this.
John Stamos.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
There it is. I picked the right one.
Hey, yeah, yeah.
All right, we really got to get started
here.
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah, so the reason we're talking about crashing and burning... The reason we're talking about just crashing is there is one particular arena of dating life that can cause you to crash hard, and we want to help you avoid that. So we're going to talk a little bit more. We've spoken in past episodes about who you ought to look for to date and then how you ought to approach the dating process. So we have spoken about this idea of seeing a date as a divine appointment to edify, to build the other person up. But we haven't really gotten into detail about like the guarding the intimacy that is intended for marriage and not moving too fast into the wrong arenas while dating. And so today we're going to talk about like just the very obvious, hopefully it's maybe it's very obvious. I would assume it's very obvious to everybody else that when you start dating somebody, there is an absolute magnetic pull toward one another that can result in crossing lines in physical intimacy. You can start to get sexual, you can start to get sinful and sensual, and you can wreck your relationship before it ever has a chance to start if you're not careful. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how do you actually avoid crashing and burning. So before we get into the details of that, let's just hear really quickly. Now, this is, again, this is a countercultural conversation, right? So you can expect to hear some things here that you wouldn't find on the average social media page. You wouldn't hear in the average pop song or see in a popular movie. You're going to hear
Danny DeVito probably isn't doing it, even though he's a pop star icon
and sexually magnetic. Let's just admit it.
All right, I'm out of here. So,
but let me just put this out here. Over the years of walking with God and years now of pastoring people, I've seen amazing young men of God and young women of God completely derailed, not just in their relationships, but in their faith by getting involved in the sexual realm while dating. And so this is a big deal. We don't want to approach this in a way that makes you feel, if you're listening to this and you've deviated and you've struggled and you've failed, we don't want to approach this in a way that makes you feel like totally disqualified and dirty and nasty and regretful. Right. And so if you have struggled in this arena or if you've failed in this arena, we want you to know we serve a God of grace. We serve a God of restoration. We serve a God that absolutely gives us second and third and infinite chances as long as we're willing to come back to Him. He is the God of a fresh start. But we want to help you. If you are going to date well, it means you are actually going to recognize that sex is for marriage.
Yeah.
In Hebrews 13, it says this. It says, marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure. The marriage bed kept pure. Here's what it's saying. There's a difference between the marriage bed and any other bed. And it is the only place for physical intimacy to be expressed. Proverbs chapter 5, Proverbs chapter 7, they make that clear. A Song of Solomon is a book of the Bible that makes it really clear that it was God's idea to hardwire us physically to be drawn toward sexual attraction. So it's not like sex is the problem. Sex is not the problem.
Right.
God absolutely, okay, I'm just gonna say it. God loves sex. It was His idea. God designed sex. He designed your body to respond toward sexual urges and sexual attraction. He designed it that way. But sex in the wrong place at the wrong time is absolutely destructive.
Yeah.
You've used the analogy many times. You've probably heard it before. Sex is like fire. In the wrong place at the wrong time, it's very destructive. In the right place at the right time, it heats our homes, it cooks our meals, it can be a something of protection, it can bring comfort. Fire in the right place is great. Fire in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know, burns whole cities. It ruins forests. So sex, similarly, if outside of marriage, if we allow ourselves to really engage in the sexual realm, we are absolutely ruining something beautiful that God intended only for marriage between one man and one woman in a monogamous, committed relationship, a covenant relationship meant to last a lifetime.
Yeah, right.
Till death do us part. Outside of that, it is destructive. So a lot of our listeners are probably familiar with this concept, and yet you may be struggling in this. You might be currently dating somebody and you know you've already crossed lines. You're habitually crossing lines. Some of you, maybe you're listening to this and you're thrilled you haven't yet crossed lines, but you know if you were to, maybe you got your eyes set on somebody and you think, okay, if we got together, man, I'm afraid, like what would keep me from crossing those lines and crossing those boundaries. We want to be able to help you with that. If you're listening to this and you're unconvinced, you're like, that's an archaic view. You know, that's just like, you guys are too old. You're too outdated. Sex is about me and I can be a responsible adult. And as long as I, you know, am safe and respectful, then I can do it my way. And I'd say we're probably not going to convince you in this episode. Yeah. We're going to speak mostly toward the mindset of you understand that this is valuable to guard this for marriage. And we're going to help you to do that. If you, if you need to be convinced in other ways, frankly, you're going to probably have to study the Bible more. You might have to crash and burn a few times before you start to realize, ooh, I need to be more aware of who I am and what this means for marriage and what this means for life. But God wants us to respond to sexual desire, but only in the right place, in the right time, with the right person.
Yeah.
So thoughts on that before we progress toward even how do you help people to do this well? Thoughts on everything I've shared so far?
Yeah, I actually have spent some time in the last year reading worldview books, not biblically based books. And a lot of studies are showing that monogamous relationships, whether in marriage or out of marriage, are healthier and better than marriages where or relationship where that's not valued.
Right.
It's really interesting. I mean, guys that are considered world leaders that you would think would not think that way. It's all about, you know, what you can get done. But production books, you know, people, achievement books are saying, no, monogamous relationships are the way to go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think I want to add to this a little bit because I do think we have a lot of listeners that are single that may not be engaged in a like mutual sexual relationship, but we're also talking about like self-gratification and self-pleasure as well as terms of like keeping yourself pure in that direction as well. Because I think you can oftentimes, if you want to go up to the line, if you want to get technical and you want to like try to, you know, get to the gray area at times. Yeah. I think you can be like, well, it's not, you know, it's not this and I'm not indulging with someone else. It's just me and I'm not even looking at anything bad. But I do think that's good to clarify is purity in regards to sex is not just abstaining from the opposite sex, but abstaining from self-pleasure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. And we're not just talking about abstinence. We're not talking about virginity.
Right.
We're not talking about like, just right. Don't have intercourse. We're talking about way more than that.
Right.
Guarding all of our sensuality and preserving that for marriage.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like you're all looking at me, but I think you guys said it all. So that was good.
You're just magnetic.
Reflecting on what you've heard, consider sending us your questions. When you email podcast@newcity.church, your feedback could shape one of our future episodes. It's a simple way to keep the podcast relational and relevant for you.
Common questions, I think, that can come to mind in this arena among young believers who really want to serve God well, but they also recognize, okay, we're dating and we like each other. Is there, how far is too far, right? Mm-hmm. Is kissing okay? You know, is it okay to XYZ fill in the blank? And so we're going to get to some of that today. But ultimately, I want to appeal to all of our listeners and ask you, don't just look for what you can get away with.
Right.
Yes.
But try to actually, let's go back to that scripture in Hebrews chapter 13. I believe it's verse 4. Let marriage be honored by all. See marriage as distinct and different. See it as God sees it. And we've spoken about this too. I think especially in episode 2, we talked about God's ultimate desire for marriage. It is to reflect a very distinct relationship, his marriage with the church. So I want to encourage you, let marriage be kept as distinct and all things related to sexual intimacy preserved for marriage. It says, let marriage be honored by all and the marriage bed kept pure. Again, it's different than every other bed. It's different than any other bed. So as we talk through this, we are going to be coming from the standpoint of not just trying to help you to keep your V card, or if it's too late for that, like, okay, don't do it again. Like don't have intercourse again until the night you're married. But we're actually saying like, raise your standard of expectation.
Yeah.
Because when you are willing to treat as distinct and holy the things that God treats as distinct as and holy, I believe you'll see a greater amount of his blessing and his fulfillment there.
Yeah that's right. Good.
All right. So we're going to go through three things, and we'll kind of break our conversation into these three arenas. I want to encourage you in this regard. Say you're dating somebody. How do you keep yourself from overstepping in the sexual realm? Number one, make a plan. Number two, give yourself a curfew. And number three, make yourself accountable. We'll come back to give yourself a curfew and make yourself accountable. In regard to making a plan, we're talking about specifically spelling out boundaries for yourselves.
Yeah.
Geographical boundaries, physical boundaries, digital boundaries, you know, like what we're going to look at, what we're going to watch together, what I'm going to individually, what the things I'm going to watch and meditate on. Physically, like where are we actually going to be together? Actually, geographically, where are we going to be together? Where are there places we won't go together? Let's talk more about that. And then physically, like I think there's actually wisdom to specifying. So when I hear make a plan, some of us could, when I say make a plan, some of us could think, oh, I'm just going to have a plan in my head and she's going to have a plan in her head.
Yeah.
But let's talk about actually taking it a step further. What could there be value in actually specifying that plan and discussing that plan together?
Yep. Well, I think you like trick yourself otherwise. If you don't have it, like, I think it's super smart to have it written out so you're both looking at it. I think it's super smart to act like have somebody else look over it with you. Because I think that you, and be specific, because I think that you, like you can say, oh, we're not going to kiss, but then you can kiss like super close.
What?
Like what? Kiss each other on the cheek and then it gets closer.
Are you saying like we're not going to kiss on the mouth, but then you kiss on
the real close
cheek, the
ear,
the nose.
Yeah. So like, eyeballs. I mean, I think getting fairly, getting fairly specific, I think is really smart because you're a dork and you trick yourself and you get in those moments and you're like, no, I didn't say this though. Yeah. And so if you're a little more specific, you will help yourself in those.
Well, and I think most, heat of the moment. Like, I think if you're a well-meaning Christian couple and you're like, oh, we shouldn't have sex. And that's the end
and
of it.
And that's where you leave it. Yeah.
It's like, that's where compromise ends up, is because the line between, hey, let's honor God and make sure we're doing this right, and actual intercourse is a very, there's a lot of things you can do in there.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where a lot of couples
list some of the things.
No, I think I'm good.
Give us some ideas.
Our audience.
That's our after 10 PM podcast.
Yeah.
Indian Lake
Twilight
wrestling.
Hours with Twilight Talks. Come back later for Twilight Talks with Aaron and he'll describe.
To be clear, we will never have that talk.
Yeah. It was a joke.
Okay, good.
Anyway, so I think that's where well-meaning Christian couples who have been raised in the church, who have these ideas of like, oh yeah, we shouldn't have sex, they end up in that place. And then suddenly it's like, well, we're living together and now we're getting married. And well, you know what? We're going to get married next month. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. We love each other. We're committed to each other.
So, because I feel like we've counseled a lot of couples who've come to the church to get married and they're living together and they were raised in the church and, or one of them was, and that's kind of where it started, is like, yeah, I knew not to have sex, but obviously that leads you down a path where if you just, if that's your only definition there, you're going to end up crossing it quickly because there's so many other paths that can lead you there that once you cross them, it's way harder to go back.
Yeah.
And so I think what Rachel's saying about being specific and being very like, just very detailed in that plan and submitting it to other people around you will help you understand how to maintain that. And then honestly, like when you make a plan, like if you just make a plan to go to the gym and you say, I'm going to go to the gym 4 times a week, that's really easy to like just give up on. But if you are like, oh, I'm going to make a plan and I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to do this
day.
Yeah. We're going to run this day and we're going to do this. And then your friend's like, I haven't seen you at the gym in 4 days.
Yeah.
And you said you were going to run with me. And then you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. So there's a little bit more accountability when you're more specific and you have people around you.
Yeah. Well, and even specifying for the reason of, say you're dating somebody who comes from a very different background than you. And like, maybe they came to Christ, you know, as a teenager or a young adult, and they had a lot of like really raunchy sexual relationships.
Yeah.
And in their mind, man, just to not have intercourse would be a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say, no, like, let's actually get into more detail, you might actually really realize, oh, okay, I didn't even know we were talking, like that's off limits. This is off limits.
Yeah.
Just helping each other recognize, let's set a different standard for godliness and purity in our relationship. And let's save all that we can for the marriage relationship.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it is worth the wait. Rachel and I will not get into detail to embarrass, you know, whoever may be listening to this. But I'm just telling you, we have a wonderful, wonderful relationship. And I'm thrilled that we saved so many of those things. And we did not do this perfectly with one another or with others. We didn't do it perfectly. But there was so many things that we set apart as special for marriage. It was worth the wait. Absolutely worth the wait. So let's list off a few things really quick that should be on that list that we would recommend if I were to do it over again. Let's say maybe we're not going to label anybody else with this, but if I were to do it over again and go back to our dating relationship, here's things that would absolutely be on our list. Here's our plan.
Well, I think one of the areas that we talk about often is like, I had an apartment that when we were dating and by myself, and I think we spent time on the couch. Now, we didn't do anything crazy or bad or inappropriate that was beyond our boundaries, but it was definitely probably the place of most temptation in our relationship. Yeah. It was like watching a movie at our house on the couch. We tell all of our people that come to us today, like, no horizontal. Like, you shouldn't be laying down together. Yeah. You know, you're just engaging.
Setting stuff up.
So geographically, I would have said, like, avoiding our apartment.
Yeah.
You know, unless other people were there. Mm-hmm. Another thing is I would have avoided us being on the couch together, you know, and those things, or, you know, at least separate in those environments.
I think even if you have roommates, like, you don't go into your partner's bedroom, even if they have roommates, like, don't go into their room. You can hang out in common space areas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cars. I agree. I think never in any bedroom alone.
Right.
Yeah.
We didn't do that.
Yeah.
That was something we did avoid.
But even like in the car, like, I think you can even get into trouble. I don't think that was typically not a temptation for us, but I think if it is for you, you got to, like, I think the big thing here is like, you have to know your limitations.
Right.
And if kissing is going to lead you down a path quickly that leads to all the other subsequent steps, then you got to cut that out.
And you said subsequent.
Isn't that
is that how you pronounce it?
Subsequent.
I
say subsequent.
Maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Well, she really wanted to subsequent. Put the emphasis on the right.
Maybe it works either way.
Sequential steps.
It's probably your British roots. Subsequent.
Yeah. I am not British.
Email us at podcast@newcity.church if you think she said it right.
Anyways.
I'm sure
not to derail you, but to go back. Yeah, you got to know yourself.
Yeah, and your background, like you said, if you come from a background where you have done this a lot in the past, it's probably way better that you're just strict to begin with, because your past has led you down paths that are hard to come back from.
Right.
And so you want to operate in the most purity that you can possible. And so I think there's a couple of non-negotiables, in my opinion, on that list. But I think how you approach those and who you involve in that can be up for debate. But I definitely think boundaries that revolve around like kissing and like your positions and geographical things, and then like also like body parts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to this in a moment when we talk about being accountable, but I think whatever plan you draft, it should be specific, and then you should actually have other eyes on it. Let somebody else look over it with you.
Right.
And either laugh because you are so vague that you're giving yourself way too much margin and room for temptation and failure, or maybe back you off and be like, okay, hold on. This
is like really, you're never going to hold hands.
You're living in prison. Yeah. Come on. Don't be dumb. You're going to set yourself up for failure.
Right.
But I think having other eyes on it is important.
And earlier is probably better than later. Cause
absolutely.
I think when you really start caring for someone after you've been together for a while, especially when you're like, oh, okay, this is headed towards marriage, you can get yourself easily into trouble because your brain says, well, you're going to marry them anyways. Why would you?
Right.
What difference does today make versus tomorrow or whatever, a week from today? I think you want to stick to those.
I got a story about that. Let me... Okay, I'll try to keep this short. This is a story I heard from a youth speaker when I was in high school. So I don't know this couple, but he was telling this story about this like amazing godly couple in their church. And they're like, they're both like spiritual leaders. They're so great. And they'd been engaged for a while and they'd like really lived pure. They've done this really, really well. And her parents were gone. It was like a week before their wedding or something like that. Her parents were gone. And so she did like this special thing for him, did a dinner at their house. And so one thing leads to another after dinner. And they're like, they're kissing and they're just like, and they're like, you know what? We're getting married next week anyway. Like, this is just a perfect situation. They end up like, they end up like fully nude, he's like carrying her in his arms, walking down to her, taking her downstairs into the basement to go to her bedroom. And they walk to the basement stairs. The lights come on. Surprise! There was like 50 people from their church there to surprise them and throw them like this spontaneous joint wedding shower in order to give them all these gifts and bless them and honor them and pray over them. And they were just disastrously exposed at the most worst time.
So if you're tempted to go ahead and go through those steps early, just know we're planning a surprise party. Yeah. And you never know when it's coming.
Okay, so obviously that is such a bizarre scenario. Yeah. I don't ever see that happening.
I hope it doesn't happen to anyone.
That being said, I want to speak to those who are like, oh, we're engaged. What does it matter? We're going to be married. Yeah. Here's why it matters. Just because God's word says it matters.
Yeah.
Engaged is not married. Mm-hmm. Engaged is not married. There is a difference. So invite God's blessing into your relationship. Keep it for marriage, not just virginity, not just intercourse, but keep your sexuality, your sensuality, those desires. Store them up for marriage. And then, man, Song of Solomon, baby. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. In marriage, it makes a difference.
Well,
it draws you together.
It's interesting because I feel like I've talked to a lot of couples, like especially in their early years of marriage. We've met with a lot of couples that they are married and they failed before marriage together. Yeah. And now they're like, we have all these issues. And like, maybe she doesn't trust him. They're having intimacy issues, like all this different stuff. And it's like, yeah, you don't see the consequences of it in the moment. And you think like, well, we're going to be together forever. I'm not going off and sleeping around. I'm not being promiscuous. But truly, you are sinning against God. So you will reap what you sow. Even if the person that you slept with is the person you marry and you weren't married to begin with, you will reap what you sow.
Yes.
And it will come back in your marriage somehow. So even if that's where you're at today and you are married, like, I just want to encourage you, like, there's hope and there's redemption and there's restoration, but you will have to repent. And
there is consequence.
Yeah. And you should be repenting to each other. Like, if you haven't repented for that season of your life, like, you need to come back to your spouse and just repent for the way you treated their body as what it wasn't to you in that moment. But there is, and honestly, I think a lot of those couples needed guidance and help to figure that out.
Sure.
So if you're in that spot and you need help, send us an email. We can set you up with somebody in our church or wherever you're at locally. Yeah.
We've spoken about this idea several times before, but marriage is done in community. Healthy marriage is done in community. So the preparation process is best done in community.
Yeah.
And I would say for as well as we did it, Rachel and I did not do this perfectly. We were not flawless in this arena of our relationship. And there were consequences. There's a lot of conversations we had afterward, repenting to one another. And there was hindrances in our trust for one another.
Right.
Because honestly, like, even if we were to be married, I knew, like, okay, hold on. Like, she says she loves and honors and obeys God, but she was willing to go here with me. Like,
yeah.
So who was in charge then? Because it wasn't God.
Right.
So was she in charge? And what confidence does that give me that she's going to stay faithful and loyal to Jesus when it's inconvenient at some point in our future together?
Right.
True.
So you're going to have to grapple with that. You will lose trust. You'll lose confidence in one another. It will hinder intimacy for sure.
Yeah.
God does forgive. He does restore. But it does not mean that your sin is without consequence. So make a plan. I like what we've geographically said so far. Like, stay out of each other's bedrooms. Don't even be in your apartment alone together. Be wise about where you are in the car. I think, you know, if you're living at home and he's got roommates, you know, you could just be out of convenience. You could be in the car a lot to have these long, drawn out conversations. And you know what those always lead to? They lead to like steamy windows, right? That's what they lead to.
Maybe go for a walk instead.
Yeah, find yourself
public place.
Be committed enough to Jesus that you don't allow yourself to find a loophole.
Yeah,
because you could draft a great plan, and then you could find a loophole, because ultimately what's going on in your heart is idolatry, and really is not. You're making an idol of that other person. You're making an idol of your own emotions, your own temptations, and you're ignoring the voice of the Holy Spirit in this process. And you could, that's religion when you say, "Oh, look, we followed the plan." Because you didn't write certain things, or you didn't specify certain things, but you just found a way around it because your heart was selfish.
Yeah.
Man, we're just kind of going for the jugular here, aren't we? The juggler.
Get him.
Juggler.
All right, so
nobody likes jugglers.
Yeah, nobody. So we talked about
you are an impressive juggler, though.
I would
a little hidden talent of yours.
Let me throw a couple of the things out there. I would encourage you, girls, don't sit on your guy's lap, with or without clothing.
Oh,
and you might be, girls might be thinking, really, that's weird. Guys aren't. Guys are like, I know exactly why. And if you're not, guys, you're not being honest with yourself.
Yeah,
I think about this. You could call them the swimsuit areas. Wherever a swimsuit touches, I shouldn't.
Yeah.
And some of you are thinking, I could buy her a skimpier swimsuit.
No, stop. I do think it's hard to put out like physical boundaries for people, like specific ones, because I think it depends on the couple. Like I know couples that waited to kiss until the wedding day and it worked out great for them. And I think that is great. And they did not really have a whole lot of temptation because they just said, no, we're not going to go there at all.
So some couples, to address what I just said, you're saying some couples would be totally fine if he had his hands all over her breasts.
I think what you're saying is accurate.
Yeah. No, I'm saying there are some things that are absolutely clear.
Yes.
Don't you dare to leave this up to, well, it works for us.
There are non-negotiables in it.
Let's be clear then when we're speaking about those. Because I just said avoid swimsuit areas, and I'm telling you, that's hard and fast.
Do it.
Whether clothes are on or off.
Yeah.
Like, A, clothes should not be off, but clothes on.
Keep it
closed. You do not touch swimsuit areas.
Yeah. Sorry.
And if I find out as your pastor
what are you gonna do?
That you're touching swimsuit areas, I'm going to send you to Rachel because she evidently thinks it's all subjective.
No, I think that is very accurate. I think getting into more details, like, are we going to hold hands? Are we not going to hold hands?
Sure.
But I think that's where you have to bring other people in because somebody's self-control is different than other people's self-control based on their willpower, their background, their whatever it is.
And at the risk of making it really weird, evidently, some people are really into feet for crying out loud.
So weird.
That is true.
So if we're talking about that low of a bar, we better be real honest with ourselves about when we're saying, what are the areas we ought to avoid? Yeah. You could be slipping off your sock and sending your dude into an inner tornado.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just saying.
Keep your socks on, buddy.
I think this really has to come back to just the idea of knowing yourself and being honest with yourself and not convincing yourself of anything else. Because you can convince yourself of anything. But if you're genuinely in the process with Jesus and you're seeking to have better understanding of your inner self and who you really are, like, you'll know, like, I'm just not going to do that because that's going to cross this boundary. That's going to engage this thing in my mind. Absolutely. You can dive into that and you can get there by just being really, really honest with yourself. And then I love the idea of bringing people into it, you know, I think. Because they're going to bring clarity into the areas that you're maybe not willing to bring clarity because of selfishness or just honestly, like, innocence. Like, I think there's people that are, and they're just innocent, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's true.
So bring other people into it to help you weigh through the innocent part of that.
One of the reasons I don't mind at all making this a little bit awkward by getting specific is because our world, I don't think we honestly know how often we are sedated and influenced by the messaging in this world.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
And we can so easily lower the bar or just categorize advice like this as, oh, that's old fashioned or, oh, that's backward or, oh, it's puritanical and limiting and judgmental and pharisaical and legalistic. And yet we have to recognize, really, we have to be honest about our own motivations. We have to be really transparent and authentic about what really is motivating me. Mm-hmm. And then I think we also have to be willing to go back to the Word of God and say, okay, what does it really say and mean?
Yeah.
What does it say and mean when it says the marriage bed kept pure? Pure is without mixture.
Yeah.
No mixture, without mixture. So I think if you're married and listening to this, maybe you're listening to this for the sake of your kids or loved ones that you bring counsel to, your marriage bed should stay pure. without mixture. So what are you listening to? What are you leaning into? What are you dabbling in? What are you reading? What kind of shows are you watching? Yeah. And what kind of entertainment are you bringing in to your relationship? The marriage bed should be kept pure. There's blessing in that. There's blessing in that. And if we're just looking for a loophole, man, we are going to find pain.
Yeah.
But I think we've got to be willing to have, I think, people challenging us. And, you know, it's hard to, honestly, it's probably why a podcast is a good format to get this conversation going. Because it's really hard to just be like, all right, here's my relationship, you know, give me both barrels and like blast away. Tell me what I need to do differently. But if we can start a conversation here,
right,
maybe you can continue it. In fact, let me strongly urge you, continue it with someone else who can help you to think about this differently. Maybe there's things we're saying that are just like blowing you out of the water. Grapple with these things. Don't immediately dismiss them because they don't make sense to you. And honestly, don't immediately just follow them because I guess that's what they said and I have to do it. But do this well in community.
Right. Yeah.
So that ties into, again, make yourself accountable. I don't want to skip over this idea of giving yourself a curfew.
Yeah.
And we could talk about this briefly, I think, but this can sound so limiting and like, come on, give me a break. I'm not a third grader. Like, why do I need a curfew? I'm 28. I'm got my own life, my own budget, my own car, my own home. Why do I have to give myself a curfew?
Well, I think, as I say in Proverbs, about the fool after dark or something like that, midnight. So I mean, there's lots of things that happen in the darkness. If you want to read Proverbs and read all about it, and even Romans, what they loved, their sin they loved in the dark. So I think there's just a practical measure of like you have less judgment and discernment when it's after
willpower.
Yeah, willpower. You have less accountability. Most people are asleep. So if you're hanging out and your roommates all went to bed, like, okay, well, maybe you could slip into a bedroom or maybe you could continue down a path. And then I think just simply put, like, you want to live above reproach, which is this idea of like you want to live without you want to live with the ability that people can question and see your life very plainly and there's not stuff hidden in it. And when you live above reproach, you're basically saying, here's my life, it's open, there shouldn't be things in question here. But when you're not living in reproach, it's like maybe you and your girlfriend are hanging out in your car at a park until 3 a.m. And maybe all you were doing was talking about a fight, but it doesn't always give off that appearance. And so we want to make sure living above reproach means that like what the appearance of evil is not in our.
Yeah. I think about it this way. Have you ever like watched, like you're hanging out with your friends and you watch a YouTube video and it's late at night and you're like, oh, that's hilarious, I can't wait to show my friends. And then like the next day when you're gotten sleep, you show it and you're like, man, that is just not, that was really funny last night, but it is not as funny now.
They changed it.
Yeah. They changed it. And I think that's just a great example of like, just your brain is different at that season or at that moment in that time of life and or time of day. And you just don't make decisions and processes.
People typically will binge eat at midnight and eat a whole thing of ice cream, but
you don't have to bring our personal things up into this, okay?
They wouldn't at 10 a.m.
If I get all the calories in then,
and the next day it's like, why did I do that?
Yeah. So true.
Yeah, I think a curfew is good. And in retrospect, we looked a few episodes ago at this idea of redefining a date as a divine appointment to edify. And we talked about having intentional time together and intentional time apart. And for some, this may seem challenging because depending on your work schedule and hers, maybe you have like very few hours you can spend together. And so it makes sense. Let's spend time together late at night. I would urge you find a different pattern or find friends that are being willing to be there with you because it's going to be a lot harder to get tempted physically when your friends are right there.
Yeah.
Like,
I want to bring clarity to that because we've had this happen. If you have friends that are willing to be up with you, but also not willing to call you out for bad behavior or engaging in the same thing, that is not a friend to find yourself late. I can think of a specific example of people that were like, we went out with our friends.
Give us their initials.
No. We went out with friends and they were in the front of the car and we were in the back of the car and we weren't, they were doing things that they shouldn't have been doing. And so are the people in the front of the car. So that's not a good excuse. Like, that is just
weird.
It is very weird. Don't but these that. They were Christians. And it
I
was
hope
a great excuse.
So they hear us say, that's weird.
Don't do that.
They would be. So
they're probably not listening.
Those aren't good friends.
Right. Yeah. So give yourself a curfew, limit your time together and emphasize your time apart. There are great things that can happen in your time together. There are great things that can happen in your time apart. Very few of the great things happen late at night.
Can I just say one more thing?
Yeah.
If you're in a season where, cause when Megan and I, towards marriage or when we were engaged, getting ready for marriage, I was working at a coffee shop from 6 a.m. to noon. And I was managing a restaurant from probably 4 till whenever close was. And I think one thing I wish I would have done is we looked for ways to hang out, but I wish I would have spent more valuable hours where we, like, instead of it being late at night, I wish we would have, like, done lunch dates or done this quality thing together where we could have spent spiritual time maturing and growing and doing those things instead of, like, and we did, I mean, we had a great group of friends that were up until 4 all the time and we would go hang out with them or whatever, and they would call us out.
They were all living their best life at 4.
That's one thing I'd recommend is, like, find time that works together that's not late at night where you can actually be growing together.
Right. I also think in the vein of accountability, I think it's smart to check in with somebody that you're accountable to at least once a week. And don't be a dork and make them, like, ask you every specific question. Like, offer up. There's no point in having it if they're, like, having to ask you every question and having to think.
Ask me what we did at 12:05.
I thought you meant that was at 11.
Yeah.
You asked us how we're doing. I think we're doing fine.
Great.
We're just, you know,
we're
really struggling in the physical area, but overall we're doing really well.
Yeah.
Are you serving God and honoring God? Oh yeah, absolutely. Are you sleeping together? Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, in other areas we're serving and honoring God, just not in that one.
Just be honest. What's the point of, what's the point of doing it if you don't have honesty there?
Yeah.
And check in regularly with them, meaning at least weekly. I think depending on how you're doing, I think more often than that too, if you need it.
Yeah. I want to get more specific when it comes to the accountability portion before we're done. But I'd like to give just a little bit of clarity here. So on a super practical level, let's just walk you through this. All right. This is like making a plan by numbers. All right. Avoiding the fall by numbers. When you start dating someone, you be the one, male, female, young, old, more experienced in the church or not, doesn't matter. You, whoever's listening, be the one that says, hey, we need to make a plan so that we don't fail in the intimate department. And if they sound shocked by that or like, this is so absurd, maybe have them listen to this podcast. Come back later to the idea of whether or not I had to date this person. This could be a new concept, even for somebody who's really intent on serving God. All right. So don't ostracize them right from that statement, but suggest, like, I think it'd be good for us to honor God intentionally and make a plan for things that we will do or not do physically, things, you know, places on our bodies that we will touch or not touch, whether or not we'll kiss, where we'll go geographically, the ways that we'll, music we'll listen to, movies that we'll watch, other influences that we'll welcome into our relationship. I think we should make a plan about that. Mm-hmm. And then sit down. And I would do it individually at first. Guy, you make your list. Girl, you make your list. Then come together and compare them. And you might be shocked at how different they are.
Yeah.
Make sure that before you leave, before you progress in the relationship, you've got a combined list that makes sense to both of you that you're both willing to commit to. And then together, go to an older couple. And I don't mean like senior citizens, but anybody who's like older than you, more established in a relationship. I would encourage you, married people who have a healthy marriage that you respect, and ask them, would you be willing to go over this with us? This is the plan that we've drafted in terms of like where we'll go, what we'll touch, what we won't do, et cetera, right? So you go through that plan in writing, and then let them amend it. Let them cheer you on. Let them say, hey, you guys are being way too unrealistic here. Like, you're going to get in trouble. But essentially, get some accountability in that. Include the curfew idea. You know, this is the curfew I've got. And, you know, I don't get off till, you know, 2 a.m. on these days. And so, you know, whatever. Maybe you need to get so radical that if this person is meaningful to you and your relationship is actually progressing well, maybe you actually need to change your work schedule, if possible, to be able to have healthier times together. Yeah. I think Aaron makes a great point with that. So include in the plan the curfew idea and when you're going to be intentional about being together and when you're going to be intentional about being separate. Go back to episode 5 and listen to more about that. And then what I would encourage you to do is then like have a written list of that somewhere that you both value, you know, stick it in your Bible and have it in the glove box in your car or whatever. So it's not just this thing that you talked about one time, but it's something you can remember. We've committed to this and pray over it. Ask that couple to pray over you, that you'd be successful in this. And again, that you would honor God in it. It's not a matter of like, we have a written rule now of what we can and can't do, but this is our heart on a page. Yeah. This is what we believe the Holy Spirit is convicting us of. And we've specified it so that we can more thoroughly embrace it.
Right.
And then when it comes to accountability, I agree with what Rachel's saying. You're only as accountable as you make yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
So many people struggle with accountability because they're like, well, I asked this person to keep me accountable and they haven't even called me in a month. All right. That's not their job.
Yeah.
Let me say this loud and clear for anybody who's ever wanted accountability with anything. It is not their job to check on you.
Right.
It's not their job to text you. It's not their job to prop you up every day. It is your job to make yourself accountable.
Right.
You check in with them. You touch base with them. You open up with them. You will only get out of that relationship what you are willing to pull out of that relationship.
Yeah.
And so if you really actually want guidance and accountability and input from somebody else, make it obvious.
Yeah.
You make it obvious. That's your job, not theirs. All right, let me pause there before moving on. But what are your thoughts so far?
Yeah, there's nothing worse than people that ask me to keep them accountable and the expectation is for me to reach out and text them. Because honestly, somebody that you want to be accountable to is typically somebody that's further along in a season of life. You know, you could definitely have a brother that would encourage you and help keep you accountable. And I have somebody like that. We've talked about it several times. But also when I think about my relationship with like Nate or these other guys that I value their voices, I don't wait for them to text me to say, hey, when's the next time we're getting together? Yeah. It's me that's being the squeaky wheel in their life because they typically have more kids. They have more responsibility. They're in a different season of life. And I want that opinion that I'm willing enough to go and drag that out of them. And then also I'm willing to, I'll buy them a coffee. I'll, you know, send them a treat or I'll spoil them in one way or another if I can. Not Nate's looking at me like, oh yeah,
Nate maybe would we love should.
I'm looking forward to it. No, I will say you really live what you're sharing.
Yeah.
I want you to know Aaron does this.
Yeah. So don't wait for that person to pursue you. And oh man, that's being in youth ministry. My favorite is when I get a call from a parent and they're like, you really need to call Tommy. And I'm like, yeah, you should tell Tommy to call me.
Yeah.
You're not helping Tommy in the future.
Yeah.
You know? So I think being willing to pursue and go after those people, that's your job. And then if you screw up like that, oh, if you screw up, that's the time you want to be reaching out to those people because they're going to not just help you in that situation, but they're going to reaffirm who Christ sees you as and who he is. Like when I get calls or when people I have a relationship with and they're like, hey, I failed. My initial response is not always just like slap them and be like, you're a fool. But to, hey, thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for being open. Don't forget, this is what the enemy intends and this is what God intends. And we want to embrace fully what God intends in those seasons. So diving into that, man. Yeah, if you're struggling with that, that's the time to be communicating with your
That's good.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah, a good mentor will never shrug off your sin, or a good friend in general. Mm-hmm. They'll never shrug off your sin and just be like, oh, it's not a big deal. We all struggle. We're all human. That's stupid. That's a really bad response.
Yeah, if you have someone doing that in your life.
But they'll also not just lower the boom and you are an idiot. I can't believe you have any idea what that's going to create. Like, no, they're going to be somewhere in the middle. They're going to say, dude, I love you. Tomorrow's a new day. Let's move forward. Let's go to Jesus for forgiveness. But also recognize like he's willing to provide that, but there's going to be some fallout here, and here's what you got to expect. Yeah. Let's walk through this together.
Don't do it again.
Let me give a few quick points. I think I can give this quickly, and I wonder if, tell you what, if you really want this, email us and we'll send this to you, but I'm going to give you 9 quick points on pursuing a mentor, because it kind of falls in line with this discussion. And so here's what I would encourage you to do. If you're in a church community, and if you're not in a church community, get into a church community. I would encourage you, if you're like, man, I want somebody older and wiser and more developed in any way, whether it's in this arena of relationships business, starting a business or handling your finances or whatever, developing in a sport. I don't know what it is like, no matter what the arena, if you want somebody feeding into your life and speaking into your life, here's what I would encourage you to do. Join a small group, join a ministry team, go through whatever your church is. In our church, we've got this thing called Discover Track. Go through the process of like just finding a way to get more engaged in church life. Mm-hmm. If you're in a much smaller church, then you just show up on a weekend and you see kind of the regulars that are there. Go long enough to that small group, that ministry team, Discover Track, whatever it is, go long enough to where you can see a person where you generally think, okay, I could learn something from them.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to start this process. Here's the process. Number one, have a one-on-one conversation with them. Maybe treat them to coffee and say, hey, could I take you to coffee? I want to talk to you about a mentoring relationship. Number two, tell them at that coffee date, tell them the arena of life in which you are hoping for guidance, marriage, business, spiritual growth, whatever it may be. Here's what I would like to receive from you. And tell them why you want, number three, tell them why you want guidance from them. What do you see in their lives that makes you want to glean from them? All right. So number one, you invite them out, bless them. Number two, it's a one-on-one conversation. Number two, tell them, this is where I want your help. And I want to specify that because there are arenas where I could be very beneficial to a person, and there's others where I would not be helpful at all.
Yeah.
All right. So don't assume that mentoring is like, I'm going to just follow this person like Jesus. Don't do that. Only follow Jesus like Jesus. All right. Right. But there's going to be arenas where they're healthy, they're strong, they're knowledgeable. Go to them for that. And along with number three, be able to tell them why you want that input from them. All right. So number four, ask them if you can meet in order to get their guidance for a defined period of time, once a month for 6 months, weekly for 3 months, whatever it is, but specify it. And then set a limit that's long enough to make progress, but not so long that it feels like a marriage. All right. So like, let's do this for six. Yeah. Would you be willing to give me once a month for 6 months? Or specify a time that meets your schedule and hopefully meets theirs. But I would go back to something Aaron just said. If they're worth getting input from, they're probably more busy than you are. They're probably less available than you are. So they might say, I can't do monthly, but I'll do every 6 weeks. You know what? If you're hungry for their input, you'll take it.
Yeah.
All right. So number five, give them time to decide. So you've already told them, this is what I want input in. This is why I'd like it from you. And this is how often I'd like to get it. So number five, give them time to decide. Then follow up. If they decline, find someone else to approach. If they agree, then set the date for the first meeting. Number six, a day or two before your agreed meeting time, text them two or three things that you want to discuss.
Yeah, that's good.
So it gives them time to think and prepare. It honors their time. It gives them time to give their best once you actually get together and you get their input. When they give you input, ask questions, dig deeper, take notes, admit your struggles rather than just pretending you got it all. Like, say, yeah, I'm weak there, or I struggle in that. You know, try to actually make the most of the relationship. Don't just look good. All right. Number seven, look for ways to show gratitude with generosity, with being timely. You know, don't show up late. Don't sleep through your alarm and blow half the meetings. I've had guys show up late and I've just said, sorry, you're late. You didn't do what I asked you to do in the time since our last meeting. So I'm going to leave. And you can have time alone to do what I asked you to do in the meantime. So like, show gratitude. If you're the one being mentored, show gratitude, be generous, be timely, be flexible. And your meeting with them might be grocery shopping or cleaning your garage or taking a road trip to their kids' sport programs. Like, you're being flexible to work into their life. Yeah. Because they're willing to share it with you. All right. So if you're being weird about, look, he wasn't even focused on me, maybe that's all the focus he had.
Yeah.
So take what you can get and look for ways to bless them. Look for ways to honor them. Look for ways to thank them for what they give. Mm-hmm. Number eight, when that season has expired, whatever the 6 weeks or 6 months or whatever it is has expired, thank them. List for them the ways that they've helped you and make it easy for them to ditch you.
Yeah.
Don't assume like, hey, can we do this again? I think you should say, I would love to do this for another 6 months if you're willing to. I totally understand if that's not possible. If you want to think about it for a few weeks and let me know, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. So it's easy for them to say, yeah, let's do that. I like that. And that was good for me too. Or dude, glad you benefited. Here's another dude I could recommend. And maybe you could ask for recommendations. If they never restart that conversation, hey, I noticed you didn't get back to me. That's totally cool.
That's great.
Are there others that you could recommend that could maybe lead me into this next one? Number nine, if you like the idea of continuing the mentoring relationship, do express it, but repeat the entire process above completely. Like, don't just assume they're going to re-up. Go back to them and say, you know, I'd actually like to dig more into this arena. And this is why I think you're the right person to help me in that arena. So there's a lot there, but I would be glad to share that with you. Email us at the pod or at podcast@newcity.church and we can send that your way if you'd like it.
Yep. Can I add something slightly?
Please do.
I had a lady recently reach out and just say, oh, I really love you and Nate, and my husband and I would love to get mentored by you, or if we'd love your input on if you know somebody that would be good for us, which I think is a genius way to approach it, because
shows flexibility.
Yeah. Like, she knows us, but she kind of knows us from the stage, which is fine. But we actually probably know people that would fit way better with their scenario than how we would fit with their scenario.
Yeah.
And so, she probably could get more out of it if she was willing, not so dogmatic about, you know, wanting us to mentor them, but down for somebody that we would maybe recommend for them to get mentored by.
I almost always have ideas for who could fit well with a certain person's life, their stage of spiritual growth, what they're going through. In case you're listening and you know me, like, my default answer when somebody comes to ask for mentoring, my default answer is, I'm honored you would ask me, but no. That's my default answer. Unless, I'll continue, unless God specifically tells me to, because I know the bandwidth I have. I know the margin I don't have. Right. I know the responsibilities I have. So there's a short list of people in my life that get most of me.
Yeah.
Until God says, meet with this person for a short period of time, the answer is no. Mm-hmm. But I will always try to help you find a person who's a more appropriate fit and more available.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you would get sick of me. The people that get the most out of me meet with me like once a month. So you would be like, a lot of people would be like, I need once a week. And I'd be like, sorry, sayonara. Yeah.
I can say I've honestly never passed on somebody that's asked me to mentor them without giving a recommendation, because that person would benefit more from that relationship than they would from me. Like, if I pass on somebody, I'm going to recommend somebody that will benefit you 10 times what I ever could, whether it's availability, whether it's a season of life, whether it's experience. Yes. And like, networking is my game. So if I'm passing you on, you should be excited, because that's like really what I'm good at is networking. And honestly, like, I can really give like 3 or 4 people the time that they probably genuinely need from me. And
number one's Megan, number two's Nora, number three's Joel.
So there's two, there's room, one more, but like, realistically, like, and so I pass people off all of the time. And it's not because I don't want to spend time with you. I would love to spend more time. It's genuinely like, I want the best for you.
Yes.
And honestly, I think it's the church becoming the church more so. Like, the church is not about the pastoral staff.
Right.
It's really about the relationships together, the network, right? The work of the net, like helping us all to hold together collectively what God wants us to hold and accomplish and do. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's a blast when you know somebody in the church that somebody else doesn't know, or they don't even know, oh, they could help me in that arena. Mm-hmm. And like, 6 weeks later, they're like, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I agree.
Well, I think this has been long enough.
Yep. We should wrap it up.
All right. Hey, we love you guys. Look forward in the next episode to hints about what's coming in season 2. We actually do have ideas for season 2. We'll share them with you soon, but for now, we're going to pray for you. So, Lord Jesus, for our listeners today, I pray your grace for them. I pray for hope for a fresh start for those who feel like they have just absolutely crashed and burned in this arena. I pray for your grace to encourage them, to love them, to meet them where they're at. And God, I pray for a hard and fast determination in every one of our hearts that we are going to love the Lord our God with all our heart, all our soul, all our mind, all our strength, and we're going to love our neighbor as ourselves. And Lord, I think about those two commands and I see how relevant they are to this discussion. Lord, let that genuinely be our commitment, God, to really love the way you want us to love and love who you want us to love. Lord, I pray your blessing in this arena. Keep us pure, keep us focused on you, and let us treat with honor the marriage relationship that reflects your heart for us and ours for you. I pray your blessing on those who listen today. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.